The information where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.
Right, the Apollo moon landing. Is it fact? Is it fiction? Everybody will say it's fact. Until you start looking at some of the details. December 1969, this is when it all happened. And National Geographic is the biggest publication, top-selling magazine in the world. It was got 11 million copies in it. And if National Geographic says it's true, it has to be. Life magazine, of course. Very big selling magazine. And this is about 8 years earlier, 1961. April 21st, 1961. Yuri Gagarin, we all recognise as being the first man in space. Khrushchev, very proud of him. Of course, it was all lies. He wasn't in space. He didn't go into space. He certainly wasn't the first. He wasn't even the second. He wasn't the third. Because what was going on behind the scenes in Russia was just the same as in America. What nobody actually knew at the time was it was all being recorded. We'll come to that. I showed April 61. This is May 61. 6 weeks later, John Kennedy, famous statement, land a man on the moon before the decade is out and returning safely to the Earth. They didn't know they could do that. They hadn't sent a man into space at all, let alone to the moon. In April 1961, it was unknown. But America had to do something because Russia had done it, they thought. They thought Russia had put man into space. Bear in mind what was going on at the time. The space race. Cuban Missile Crisis, JFK assassinated, Vietnam War, student riots, other assassinations. It's a pretty rough old time. Let's have a bit of diversionary tactics. Let's see what's going on. The Russians, of course, disappear people as well. That's Gagarin. This is Sergei Korolev, who is the genius behind the Soviet space program. I shouldn't say Russian, Soviet is the correct name. Russia is what happens today. Soviet was back then. He was the genius behind it. He was the man who created the environment. He'd spent time in a gulag as well, so it's obviously a good way for him to rehabilitate himself. This is Gagarin, these are other astronauts, and you'll notice that they don't all survive. They get airbrushed out of pictures. It's a matter of knowing where to look. This guy here, he was killed on re-entry. And this is how it was discovered. These two Italians, Achille and Gian Giudica Cordiglia, they were very enthusiastic and very good ham radio operators. They'd set up these receivers to listen in to the Soviet spacecraft as they went overhead. This is in near Turin. And they worked out the frequencies they should listen in. And they heard the broadcasts from the Soviet craft. Their sister, Teresa, actually learned Russian so she could translate the what was coming through from the Russian spacecraft. And what was coming through was quite unequivocal. They were hearing stories of astronauts who were getting very hot, and where are we going? And there was mystery, there was complete confusion on several spacecraft. This guy here, Valentin Bondarenko, in 1960 was burnt alive, basically. They had the same accident as the Apollo 1 craft, where they filled it with pure oxygen. And any schoolboy will tell you that you don't put pure oxygen under pressure, it's liable to explode. Well, that he found out the hard way and died. Now, I said Gagarin wasn't the first Russian in space. This is the first one in space who survived. There were several others who didn't survive. There are several actually moving around the sun right now. They will remain there for as long as it takes for the spacecraft to disappear, which is millions of years. Vladimir Ilyushin, son of the aircraft designer, a very sensible choice. He was a test pilot. A very well-decorated, very well-regarded test pilot. He was the obvious choice to fly in space. April the 7th, 1961, there was a launch of a spacecraft. Three orbits of the Earth. Regrettably, his retro rockets misfired to the extent that he landed in the wrong country, China. Not Russia. The Chinese and the Russians didn't really get on too well. He was very badly injured. He was taken into Chinese hospitals, which is strange because Chinese hospitals weren't considered to be as good as Russian hospitals at that time, 1961. The cover story was he had a car accident. Why was he going to China? Anyway, he survived. He retired as a general in 1999. And he gave several interviews after his retirement where he basically said, yeah, it did happen. As we know that Soviet news agencies actually announced that as well. Official. The Guardian was not the first. He wasn't the second, third, fourth, he was the tenth Russian into space. Several didn't survive. Now, there will be a question later. Well, if what you say about the American space program is true, how come the Russians didn't blow the whistle? You've just seen why. The Americans knew all about this. Here they are, our heroes. Kennedy with our favourite Nazi, Werner von Braun. He was a brilliant scientist, a brilliant space engineer. This is what he came up with in 1952. We've all seen it. It's in the film 2001. The famous space circle. I wonder why they didn't build them like that. The space station is now a pretty pathetic thing compared to this, which is what could have been built. Anyway, he was great friends with Walt Disney, who creates fantasy, doesn't he? A very good film director from home. And of course, if you're going to go to the moon, you have to practice and you have to have the simulations. And these are the simulations. This is the moon. It is, you can see it today, it's in San Francisco, on the parks in San Francisco. These are the sections of the moon. These are two people here. So it's a big scale. There's a lot of money went into this. And if you create an image of the moon pretty accurately from photographs and you track a camera along the body track, you'll appear to approach the moon. If you photograph it. Now, this is. There's nothing secret about any of this. This is the whole point of the Apollo program. There was nothing secret. There were no studios in Area 51, for instance. That didn't happen. These were in Virginia. These were in California. There were some in Texas. There was a life-size model, 2 miles long, of the Sea of Tranquility in Arizona. In Flagstaff in Arizona. It's featured in a BBC series called The Planets. Nothing secret about it. They were going to simulate what they thought conditions were. And this is Bill, this is Langley, this is Virginia. Who else has an operation at Langley in Virginia? The CIA. Quite yes, yes. They built this quite openly so they could practice landing their weird little lunar module on the moon. It's big, this thing. It's just about 100 foot high, 300 or 400 foot long. You think it's on the moon, wouldn't you? And you've got to practice. You've got to get your spacesuit on, and you've got to practice digging rocks and climbing ladders. This is Neil, and this is Neil again. But he's not on the moon. It's pretty obvious he's not on the moon. And he had to fly this strange contraption. This is the simulator for the lunar lander. And this is what was built. This is the practice one. This is not the real one. This is the practice one. This is the interior of the lunar lander simulator. And this is Neil Armstrong crashing it. It was never flown successfully on Earth. So the lunar lander had never ever been successfully landed on a little over the moon. Okay, let's get to the moon. Saturn V rocket, magnificent piece of technology, 365 foot high, weighed 3,000 tons, And the top little bit there is the command module. And that's the bit that went to the moon. Now, very recently, I came across a translation from the Russian of a very detailed examination of the speed that the Saturn V rocket reached. And it's possible to calculate it from films that were taken of the launch. Unlike Andrew, I don't have the films on video we're working on. But the film of the launch of the Saturn V, it went straight up, and separated the first stage, this is the bottom bit here, from the second stage here, was filmed. It was about happening about 50 miles up. And the separation would indicate the speed at which the rocket was travelling at that point, depending on the number of frames per second in the film, which can also be calculated anyway. This Russian, to cut a long story short, calculated the Saturn V rocket was not flying fast enough to carry the 50-ton payload it was alleged to be carrying to get to the moon. It was only carrying, it was to do with speed of acceleration. You have to achieve a certain number of meters per second, about 2,800 meters per second, or somebody can calculate what miles an hour it is. It's pretty fast.
Escape velocity is 7 miles a second, I think, isn't it?
Escape velocity from Earth is.
Yeah.
But that wasn't...
It wasn't, it have to go faster than that, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't trying to achieve escape velocity at that point. It was
right.
Trying to achieve orbit velocity.
I see.
Which is 18,000 miles an hour. Escape
right.
velocity from Earth is 25,000 miles an hour. And interestingly enough, that's re-entry speed as well. So when you come back from the moon, you're coming back 25,000 miles an hour. If you're in the space shuttle, and you re-enter, you're 18,000 miles an hour. So you double the speed, you increase the stresses, and forget about re-entry. The point is, it didn't even go fast enough to launch it to the moon. But we're not going to tell you about that. Now, this is launch, this is splashdown. Between those two events, for all the Apollo programs, you have one source of information. Never a straight answer. The Americans here? No. Sometimes the Americans, they actually clap loudest. Because they know. That's a matter of, just as a little aside, they all wear spacesuits, don't they, these guys on the moon? And these spacesuits are made, obviously, and they must have protected all the astronauts from all the dangers of space because they all came back and they're all healthy. Well, a few have died, but when they came back, they're all healthy. And we know that one of the dangers of space is radiation. So I contacted the guys who make the spacesuits, a company called International Latex Corporation. They make bras normally, but in this case they make spacesuits. And I said, look, these spacesuits you made to go to the moon, could those same spacesuits be used by the technicians to go in and clean up Chernobyl or Three Mile Island nuclear reactors? Radiation is the same wherever you are. Basically, it's lethal to humans, but if you're protected, you're okay. And they said, we are built it according to the specification NASA requested. You better address your question to them. So I did. Did they reply? Forget it. I'm still not. But it's a reasonable question to ask. Okay, temperature of space. What is the temperature of space? There is no temperature in space until you have something in space which can acquire a temperature, like a spacecraft. Temperature of space is zero. Zero Kelvin minus 273. It's bloody cold. When you put something in space, it has a temperature. And that temperature is quite high. You use the Stefan-Boltzmann constant and you work out blackbody radiation and you calculate the temperature of virtually anything in space. Because it has a vacuum, space is a vacuum because there is nothing there. This is where, by the way, the zero point energy comes from the fact that zero point is nothing in space, but there is the energy in space, which is free energy. Radiation in space, I think we'd all agree that there is radiation in space. We've all heard the dangers of what happens if the hole in the ozone layer gets too big. And we're all just getting naturally dark.
We never hear about it now, though, do we?
Yeah.
Exactly, because it was financed by the head of the Seagram Corporation. The whole ozone hole controversy was a complete fabrication.
It was all financed.
In order that the DuPont Chemical Company, who made Freon, the refrigeration gas that was banned, and the patent had just run out in 1992, hence the Montreal Conference, that's where Seagram is based. They were major shareholders in the company. They got Freon, which is what we call it over here, refrigeration gas, controlled by the DuPont Chemical Company, changed the formula. You could only stop it being manufactured by legislation, and it required legislation to be introduced, which it was. $250 million in cost, and last count only making $16 billion a year profit. So it's a pretty good investment, that $250 million. Big hole in the ozone. It's a completely natural phenomenon. Nothing strange about it. It's still there now. You go to certain websites, you can see a hole in the ozone there. It occurs at the end of the Antarctic winter, when there's no sunlight. So let's come back to the sunspots. And the sun, solar wind, there's Earth in the middle, and we are protected, fortunately, by the magnetic fields of the Earth from the solar radiation. You get sunspots, you can get some pretty nasty things coming from the sun in terms of radiation. And if you may not believe this, but both America and Russia decided it was a good idea to explode a nuclear bomb 250 miles up above the Pacific, Dodson Island. It created a third belt of radiation. These guys need locking up.
Yeah.
There's Earth, this the inner radiation belt and the outer radiation belt. They call them the Van Allen radiation belts after Professor James Van Allen, who identified them by putting a Geiger counter onto one of the first American satellites to go up, Explorer 1. We're going to the moon, nice picture. That picture was taken in 1955 from the Lick Observatory in California. It's a great series of photographs. That's the Sea of Tranquility, where it is alleged certain moon landed. But in 1966, the Lunar Explorer took series of high-resolution photographs of the lunar surface. This was taken at the Vitello crater in the southwest quadrant of the moon. Let's go back down here. And this was the photograph taken. When NASA asked what these tracks were, track there, several more which don't show up very clearly, this is a high magnification, quite a small photograph. They were said that these were tracks left by rocks dislodged by moonquakes. Right. Why can't we dislodge this one, or this one, or this one, or this one, or any of the other rocks? This one managed to roll up out of a crater uphill to that point. This one has come up out of another crater. It's about 1,000 foot long. This is from trigonometry, it's 25 foot diameter, it's about 70 foot diameter. Now, I don't know what they are, but you would think, wouldn't you, it'd be nice to go back and have a look and see if they've moved a bit. Mm. If they haven't moved, can we get a more detailed photograph to identify exactly what it is? This is not a registration mark. I don't know what it is, but they appear quite frequently if you look for them. They're quite small on some of these lunar orbiter photographs.
What year was that?
Sorry?
What year was that?
66.
66, thank you.
Lunar orbiter 5. It was one of the latest ones.
No.
They were a very successful craft. Oh man.
Did you see there's quite a lot of these cross marks?
There are quite a few left. It is said that they are registration marks, but they don't appear regularly. I don't know what they are. They look like aeroplanes. The famous headline in the Sunday Sport
Sounds like a bus found on the moon.
Yeah. Yeah. Look at that picture. This is the one photograph of Earth. It's called the blue marble, because that's what it looks like. And it's, you can always identify it by this little triangle of cloud above the Sudan. That's Saudi Arabia. Where my jackets came from. Giza. The Mediterranean, top Africa, Madagascar, and Antarctica down there. It's a great photograph. We're so familiar with it that we hardly give a second thought. But have you ever seen another one?
Yes.
The whole Earth. There are one or two around, but very few are used. This is always the one that's used. Allegedly taken by Apollo 17 on their way back. Even they can't agree who took it. But when you get to the moon, of course you want to photograph the Earth. And here's the moon, isn't it? We all recognise this as the moon.
Can I ask you something?
Yes,
sorry about him. 1968, well remember that when they sent back what was supposed to be the first picture of the Earthrise, it was emerald green, it wasn't blue at all. And the Daily Mail said, green jewel in space. Why is it always blue now? Does anybody else remember that? It was emerald green.
I thought it was...
and white, with the white clouds.
It was a description of the Apollo 8 astronauts who went into the seminar in 68.
Well, it's when they said I was sat up late at night when they broadcast these things, you know, and you could see, I said, oh, gosh, there's the Earth rise. And it was, but it was green, it wasn't blue.
I
vividly remember that.
What looked like vegetation.
Yes.
Whether it is or not, I don't know.
But did you ever see that one? Do you remember that one? Yes. But you never see it now, you only ever see the blue and white.
We see the blue and white, because that's what we have to believe it is. So then, do a bit of math. This is the moon, allegedly.
Mm.
And if you're orbiting the moon, and this is taken from orbit, it's about 60 miles above the moon's surface.
Mm.
How far away would the horizon be? 60 miles up. The answer is 250 miles.
Mm.
The highest mountain on the moon is 15,000 feet, about 3 miles high. Do you think it's possible to see a 3 mile high mountain on the moon from 250 miles away?
That's a good point.
There's no atmosphere to blur the detail. It's just that you're seeing all these craters, and this is what you expect to see. We're not really trained to look at the lunar surface in any great detail, but I don't think you would see anything other than a flat horizon from 250 miles away.
Mm. I think you're right.
Yeah. It's a double exposure, actually. Very similar to doing. But if you're going to take photographs, you would do a decent camera. At least they chose a decent camera, the Hasselblad camera. Mm. This advert appeared in National Geographic in 1968, and it's the same camera you can literally walk into a shop today and buy. Costs a bit more. The digital version of this today is £45,000. Back then they were film cameras, and that's where the film was compared in the magazine at the back, and that's the film counter that's here at the minute. This is the lens. They didn't have a viewfinder, because obviously if you're wearing a spacesuit you can't put your head down, because the viewfinder is normally here on top of the camera. So you don't have a viewfinder, means that there's no mirror inside it. So if you're going to take a picture, you've just got to sort of mount it on your chest like he has and point it.
Mm.
Well, we all do that now, don't we? Because we obviously learned from Apollo how you take photographs. When I was interviewed for Discovery Channel, they managed to get the camera down from Hasselblad in Wembley. Decent guys up at Hasselblad, and they lent the camera. I took the opportunity to photograph it. There's the film counter. You'll see how small it is, and you can't see that from inside your spacesuit. These are the two batteries that are used to... It's the only automatic control on this camera is the automatic wind forward of the film. You have to focus it by hand, set the aperture by hand, and the shutter speed by hand. You'll see what you're wearing when you do that in a minute. There's the shutter itself. on the front, it's usually on the front of the camera, it's the right place to put it. This little button was to change the lenses, which were told they managed to do on the moon's surface. And this is the standard lens, it's 60mm, slightly wide angle. And you have two little things here to move your shutter speed and the shutter speed and aperture. And this is your exposure meter, obviously you need one. You have to set the shutter speed at 125th, which is up here somewhere at 5.6. That's how you do it. You don't, there's nothing automatic about it. This is what a camera will look like. This is the Hasselblad camera. This is what it will look like when it's taken from chest level. A photograph is taken from chest level. And this is what it looks like when taken from eye level. One point to watch on here, when you take a photograph at chest level, down here, the horizon, this is exaggerated, but it shows the point, the horizon will be lower. You take it from higher up, the horizon appears to be higher. Remember that as we look at some more pictures. And also remember that there is no viewfinder, no exposure meter, you have to operate all the controls by hand. You have a lot of things to operate by hand, and this is Neil Armstrong's working space as he lands the lunar module. This is his, because he, remember, famously, he took over control of the lunar lander because there was an alarm went off from the computer and he had to take manual control. And here he is doing his thing. This is the simulation, obviously. Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin. And in the famous sequence, which is the only one ever played, you hear Buzz Aldrin reading off their feet down, feet across, as Neil Armstrong tries to land it. Now you can see the dials and switches, and they're back here, and you see the joysticks he has to operate. Now ask yourself one question. In that famous sequence, you hear the sound, you hear the commentary. You hear everything being said. He is standing literally on top of a 10,000 pound thrust rocket that is luring him onto the surface. It's retro-firing, so it's slowing him down. But you hear every word he said. Well, it's obvious you're saying they're wearing their spacesuits. It's logical. And if they're wearing their spacesuits, in space, you can't hear anybody's screams, you can't hear them talk to you, you would hear everything he said. Obviously. Look at these dials, look at these controls, look at these switches. Would you operate, in effect, a computer keyboard here with heavy-duty gardening gloves, if your life depended on it, which it does at this point? If you get it wrong, you're dead. There's no RAC to come and get you. You're dead. These switches, all of which have to be set accurately, and you'll see here, this is one of these misleading photographs. Obviously you think, well, that's how they did it. They were standing there. Now, if they didn't have their spacesuits on at this point, the cabin that they're in, the lunar module, would have to be filled with air under pressure, because humans can only survive under atmospheric pressure at least 5 pounds per square inch. If he was surrounded by air, you would hear the vibration of the rocket. Rockets don't have silencers. They make a heck of a racket. And you would hear the noise. But you don't. You hear every word he says. Anyway, let's get out and have a look around. And here is Buzz Aldrin coming out of the hatch, down the ladder, onto the lunar surface to join Neil Armstrong, who's already on the lunar surface, who's got the camera out of the Hasselblad camera, and he's taking photographs of Buzz Aldrin. Now, what we have here is a sequence of 8 photographs. These are taken from the NASA website, totally untouched by, I haven't done anything about it. I wanted to get the most original photographs that I have, that I can find. So these are all, if you notice, they're all square. 70mm film, it's the same as you'll see the film in the IMAX cinema, it's the same, 70, well, quite big, 3 or 4 inches from old measurements. And there's a roll in the back of the camera, it takes 100 of them. Buzz ordering, coming out. The next sequence of 8 photographs took, according to the Apollo timeline, 3 minutes of time to photograph. A little bit further out. Now, first of all, we see a major problem. What's this here? And why isn't it in the next photograph? Back again. There is the mirror, that the triangular window, we saw that a little bit earlier, it's the one that Armstrong looked out of, which what looks like a flag reflected in the window. Hard to tell precisely. I wasn't prepared to go into great contrast and Photoshop stuff, but if that has been done, and it would appear to be a flag. Missing thing here, this is reflecting the mirror surface, which is interesting, it's something around blue. Order in a little bit further out. Now Neil Armstrong obviously got rather bored watching Buzz Aldrin coming out of his thing, and he decided to photograph the rubbish bag underneath the lunar lander. Here is the ladder down which he's trying to get, and we will get in a minute. But this is what Neil Armstrong decides to photograph. Okay, and we see another problem. What is the light that illuminates that part of the bag quite clearly, but does not illuminate the bottom there? And he gets a bit more, he decides to take it across here. See, no illumination there, plenty there. You get very selective fill-in lights on the moon. And then obviously Buzz got his act together, and he was a bit further down the ladder, so we come back further. Now bear in mind, to photograph this picture, you're photographing directly illuminated surface material, you'd have to change the aperture, or the shutter. You'd have to change the focus. You have to change the composition, but you haven't got a viewfinder. You've got the right stuff though, so you can get it right. You change your shutter again because you're now photographing this totally in shadow. This whole section here is in shadow. You see the shadows cast here. But you're not overexposing the directly illuminated surface of the moon, which is the reflectivity of tarmac. And the point about that, and the reason why I do emphasize that a little bit, is you do need to know what film was being used. The film used was transparency material, reversal, slide film. Kodak Ektachrome was. Very good film. Don't go on with the film. But as with all slide film, it has a very low tolerance of exposure latitude, which means you've got to get the exposure spot on. Or you overexpose it, or you underexpose it. And the normal way that professional photographers will do it, and I spent about 5 years working as a professional, so I've used the Hasselblad, I know what cameras can and can't do, I know what film can and can't do. And you would normally say, okay, I'm going to bracket this picture. You've got the picture there, it's basically a still life. I'm going to bracket it. I'm going to take 2 exposures, half a stop each below what I think is the right one, and 2 half a stop above it. One of those would be right, but I don't know which one yet, because I've got 238,000 miles to go before I can get it developed. So I'm going to take as many pictures as I can, change the shutter, change the aperture, make sure I get one right. No, they didn't do that. These are only pictures taken of these scenes.
Mark, can I ask, how fast is it to rewind the film on Hasselblad?
Sorry?
How fast is it to rewind to the next shot? Does it take a second?
It rewinds pretty fast.
Fairly fast.
Across the shutter, it exposes it and everything, and then it will literally wind forward for maybe half a second.
Okay.
It's quite fast to get forward. And here is dear Buzz. Well, we assume it's Buzz. We actually know it's Buzz. It says it on his front, but we don't see a picture of his face, and it comes down to the bottom. Right, I said there were 8 pictures. There they are in sequence. This does not look realistic as a sequence of photographs taken under extreme conditions, very adverse conditions. Where's all the light coming from that is illuminating here? Oh, it's reflection off the lunar surface, we're told.
it doesn't work that way. Yes, you will get reflection off the lunar surface, and I'll say this to Patrick Moore, who tries to explain it exactly the same way. Yes, you will get reflection off the lunar surface, but you don't have to be an optics professor to know that the amount of light reflected off a surface like this, like tarmac, is 7% of the light falling onto it. And even if 50% of the light that is reflected from that is subsequently reflected into the camera, you would either have to expose for that to get it correctly exposed, or for that, you can't do both in the same picture. I'm sorry for going on about the technical side of photography, but it is actually quite important. Because, oh, by the way, it's nothing to do with Earthshine either. The Earth is directly overhead at this point.
I mean, that last photograph is completely in shadow. It's completely in shadow, wasn't it? That, the very last one in the bottom right.
Yes.
He's completely surrounded by black.
Yeah, but so we'll see. Oh no, his boots are well illuminated. You'll see that in a minute. Go back to this picture here. This is probably the giveaway. Right, you're coming down a ladder. It's about 10, 12 foot above the ground. Have you ever come down a ladder like that?
Well, it's supposed to be to simulate weightlessness, isn't it?
About 6 gravity. But if he missed, if his foot missed the rung, look what his foot is doing. It's not even touching the rung.
Mm.
So his body's in motion.
Mm.
But it's not blurred. Well, it's enlarged considerably, but it's not blurred. When you come down a ladder, it's the old mountaineer's trick. You have 3 points of contact with the mountain, and then you move 1. You never move 2 points of contact, like 1 arm and 1 leg, before if you've got nothing to grab hold of. He's got 2 points of contact, he's doing, he's got both hands on the rails here. And he can't see his foot, so he doesn't know where his foot is going. But he's not resting this one close enough to be able to take it. If he missed that run there, which he quite likely did, he'd fall off. It's ridiculous. The whole thing is so fabricated and ridiculous. These were probably taken during simulation exercises. And whoever did it, the sort of, you know, the stand-in astronaut, probably thought, you know, I've done it hundreds of times, I know exactly what I'm doing, let's try a bit of fun, and that's what he tried. I don't know, could have happened. There was nothing mysterious about the simulations. Here are the boots, look, oh, look, well illuminated, aren't they? Well, that's well illuminated, not overexposed up here, as you'd expect, or a little bit washed out there, but not very much. And the famous skeptic side, where there are plenty of people who have a real... People have actually taken one of my lectures apart. They took longer to take it apart than I did to give it. I've taken it to great point. Badastronomy.com, there's one, Bromionic, Clavius. They're all mates, those guys. I don't know if they're anybody nicer, but they'll come up with some logical type explanations. And the explanation I offer for this is that the amount of light is quite high because the moon has a particularly interesting surface. It has spherical glass reflectors. So does tarmac, because it has to reflect about the same amount as tarmac. Because that's when you can look at it up in the sky. You can't look at the sun direct. You can look at the moon direct. The full moon is reflecting a relatively small amount of light. And the explanation is that the amount of light is reflected in such a way as to be picked up by here. Now these guys are astronomers, they're not photographers, and I challenged them on numerous occasions to give me a photographic explanation, and they won't even address it. Here's yet another example of, a very good professional photographer. You've got your camera here, you can't use the viewfinder. You take it off your chest, you point it at your foot, and you get the focus spot on. And the focus on a Hasselblad will stop at 3 foot. That's the closest it'll photograph, it'll focus. You do it once, and you get the exposure right, the framing right, and the focus right. You take your foot away. Right. Okay. occasionally press the wrong colour of my thing and it comes up. I've never ever used a PC, which could be a bit of a surprise, on the grounds that I don't know how to operate a two-button mouse. Really? I've got the power from it.
I've got an off on that.
Okay, we were back here, just in the forward slightly. So the sequence of eight is, you ask any professional photographer, take these variation of photographs, you've only got one possibility of doing it, and they'll say, well, of course you've got a bracket. Yeah. Nowadays it's digital, it doesn't matter how many photographs you take. And by the way, digital photographs and film photographs cannot be compared. Digital camera records light differently to the film camera. So if somebody tries to bamboozle you with examples of digital photographs explaining all this thing, it's complete nonsense. It's not comparing
like.
Exactly. Apples and pears and all that. Okay. Dear Buzz, here's the one who got photographed. Now, have you ever seen a photograph of Neil Armstrong on the lunar surface? There is allegedly one, but there's nothing that anybody could point to and say, well, that's definitively the other astronaut. No, we only get this guy, allegedly Aldrin. The story goes that Aldrin was commander of the lunar lander. Armstrong was commander of the mission. Now, they'd both flown on Gemini craft, which was the two-man craft, and the commander of that craft always got out first. He happened to be nearest the door. Aldrin thought, because he was commander of the Apollo craft, that he would be out first, i.e. first on the moon, and famous. Because of the way the craft was built, Armstrong stood on the left, but the door through which they both had to go opened right, where Aldrin was. Armstrong had to get out first before Aldrin could get out. And the story goes that Aldrin said, if you're first out on the moon, mate, I am taking your photograph. There isn't a photograph of Armstrong. This is the sort of petty thing. I don't know if it's true or not, but it makes it a story. Okay, here's one for the mathematicians. This is allegedly Aldrin, allegedly Armstrong. A photograph from the data acquisition camera, which was mounted inside the craft at one frame, it's a film camera, took one frame per second. The whole time they were on the moon. Why are two men who are about the same height, 6 foot high, why does one have a shadow length 50% longer than the other? It's not the flag, because it would be up here. That angle is about 35 degrees, that angle is about 25 degrees. But the sun return was at 15 degrees, so the whole thing just doesn't make sense. It's completely flat, so it's nothing to do with ground causing problems. This is the solar wind reflector. Now, the point about this picture is, what the hell is going on in the background? What are these things here?
Well, exactly.
What's this? These appear in quite a few. Oh, they're just brushed aside as being lens flare. This is lens flare from a Hasselblad. It reflects the dimensions and size of the actual shutter, which is mounted inside the lens on this particular camera. What are all these things here? This is on the moon. It should be completely black. But it's not. It's got what looked like girders, possibly, of a warehouse that they just haven't bothered to take out. It's... I don't know what they are. Here's the famous picture, which is, you know, it's a very good portrait. It's a very well-taken photograph, very professional. You'll notice how well filled in the shadow area of the astronaut is. You'll notice that you can see his name on here. And you'll see it's reflecting, obviously, the photographer who took it. This must be Armstrong. And how artistically done is this? Look, the horizon intercepts precisely yes. through his helmet. How absolute crap is that? You're looking down on top of his helmet, that's why.
Could I just point something else out? I've always wondered about that photo, yes. because the horizon,
yes.
you wouldn't see the slope so pronounced as that, the curvature of the planet so pronounced as that, surely.
It would be if the camera was tilted. That's the only other explanation. Yeah, that horizon should be flat.
But
that's why they landed there, because
if the camera's tilted, then he would surely have looked tilted, if you get my drift, because his feet are on the same level.
He is actually perpendicular to the horizon. So you could.
That's the centre of the picture, that big cross. There are 25 crosses.
Right.
They're reso lines. They're in a ground glass screen between the lens and the film itself. So they appear on all the official Hasselblad pictures. But if this picture was taken with a 60mm focal length lens, which we're told it was, at that distance, this is it's about 15 foot away from the camera, why is the background out of focus?
Mm.
She wouldn't be on a wide angle lens. Mm. The horizon is about on the moon, if we're on the moon, and not we're in a sand stage, but if we're on the moon, it's about a mile and a half away. And it's well focused in the foreground, and it's not very well focused there. It's a very good portrait. Probably taken away that if it was a Hasselblad camera shot, it would be about the 150mm lens. The picture we normally see is this one, with the black bit added at the top and the bit on the right type of what it is. And we didn't get their colour right. You'll see he's also standing in what looks like a pool of light, and the horizon, which if it's illuminated by sunlight, should be the same illumination from where you are to the horizon. You go out and look at the beach any day, it doesn't fall, the light level doesn't fall off when you get a few feet away or a couple of miles away. And you're standing in a pool now. Yeah, it's a pretty great spotlight. And again, this one gives it away. This was taken from a book which a friend of mine bought me from the Kennedy Space Center. So it's official NASA publication, this one. Order it inside the lunar module after his moonwalk, ditto Armstrong. That's not true. I can prove it, because this photograph was taken on the way to the moon. It's in a series of photographs taken before they got there. So they lied. I don't care, because they don't really tell the truth from it. Armstrong inside the lunar module rests on the lunar surface. Well, who took the picture and with what camera? Because there are no reso lines, there are no little crosses in any of these. These were done during acceleration exercises.
So they only took the Hasselblad cameras to
They only took the Hasselblad camera on Apollo. Each astronaut had one. They have pilots of light in their eyes, which indicate a flashbang by the camera. This is the point. Look at any press photograph, any paparazzi photograph, they've got these highlights of light in the eye. It's a natural artifact of the flashlight. It will show up a highlight. But they didn't carry flashlights on for them. Another artfully created, the artistic ability of these guys seems to be the lead. This is Apollo 12. This is Al Bean, photographed by Conrad. And here we have one of these strange. This is a light show. Blow them up in Photoshop and you can see. Again, screens here. That's the Hasselblad lens flare. Let's have a look in the reflector. His hand's nowhere near the shutter. There's the lens.
of the camera. There's his hand. It's far too far, far right. too low down to have taken a photograph, even if he had a pistol grip, which some of them did.
What would it where would the camera have been then that took that photograph? Where would it be positioned if it wasn't in that man's hand?
This would almost certainly have been double exposure. This would have been taken with a distorted camera. It's quite easy to distort a photograph. You just mount it on a curved surface when you print it. Or if it is a genuine reflection, it is sure not taken on the moon. Because where did all this light come from? You can actually see what's written on this instruction leaflet here. You can read all the detail on the shadow side of the camera. It would be in total darkness, normally. There's no atmosphere on the moon to diffuse the light. See how dark it suddenly gets when it's not necessary to get dark there? Right, again, Apollo 12. This is, notice how much lower down the picture appears to be, but you're still looking on top of the camera, on top of his helmet. Alright, he may be leaning forward, it might be that. Again, looking in the reflection. What is all this? What all is it? Mm-hmm. You've seen Capricorn 1, haven't you?
Yeah.
Okay. I got the idea from that. Again, this is in a sequence of eight photographs. I'm showing these boring ones because they're not necessary, but this is the eight photographs that these appear. It doesn't make sense that is, you're suddenly photographing this thing here, which is telling you basically what the colour gradations are. You haven't been doing the black and white, so. That makes sense. And then you suddenly see your mate and you say, oh, I'll take a picture of him. This is a very, very well staged portrait photograph. And you go and take a couple more. Oh, here he is. Oh, we'll take him again. And so on. That makes sense. Okay. On Apollo 12, they were very proud they landed right next to the crater in which the Surveyor 3 unmanned craft had landed. And they took a picture of it. Right. Why is the sun in two different directions? Shadow cast here and the shadow of the photographer should be directly behind the photographer. So it's over there. Same Surveyor 3 craft, and you'll notice this little crater here. Surveyor 3 craft, same crater. Different size craft.
Uh-huh.
One's a model. Probably this one. That's the Apollo 12 landing craft. And we'll come to the picture that NASA put forward to show us proof of the landing of Apollo 12 on the moon later on. It's taken last year. So we have this. If you've ever tried to photograph directly into the sun, the chances are the film won't have come out very well. This is a remarkable sun because it manages to, see it's so strong it gets through half the spacecraft.
Mm-hmm.
Where did all the light come from to illuminate this area here, which is in total shadow? Mm-hmm. Here we have this, which is illuminated, but it couldn't. Bear in mind that no reflectors, no flash guns were carried on Apollo. Just the cameras. Okay, this is Apollo 14. This is just your average picture of the lunar module. We're going to go on with this bit early. First of all, we're going to reverse it. Look at the position of the flag, look at the position of the ladder, and look at this, what looks like a chessboard. This is the famous golf shot on Apollo 14, where Alan Shepard and Ed Mitchell Alan Shepard here took his golf club and whacked the golf ball and, excuse me, you can see a golf ball travelling across your field of view, not a golf ball travelling towards you, which is what you normally do. And who took the photograph? There are only ever two astronauts on the moon at any one time, we're told. This is an astronaut photograph. Who took it? It's actually a montage. It's a fake. This photograph appeared about this size at the Kennedy Space Center. About 10 years ago, I pointed out that photograph didn't appear to make much sense. There were two astronauts in the photograph, but nobody, who took it? And what was the flag doing here? Remember when we looked at this earlier? We looked at the flag here. And it's moved, but nobody told. There's the chessboard, there's the ladder, and suddenly we've got this, which wasn't there. And you might say, well, okay, that's it's possibly, it's the video still, because there was a video shot of this particular sequence. It's possibly the video still of the event. This is quite a famous event, Alan Shepard. This photograph was actually taken from Alan Shepard's autobiography called Moonshot, forward by Neil Armstrong. And it's a double page spread in the book. In the paperback version, it doesn't appear. The hardback, which I have, it did appear. This is the video still of the same event. Alan Shepard, Golf Club, Ed Mitchell. Even got the flag around the wrong way there as well. The continuity is appalling on it. You know, they really do mess things up. Moving on to Apollo 15. This is my favourite Apollo mission because there is so much wrong with it. It landed at the Hadley Rill. This is Hadley Rill, and this is Mount Hadley here. That's the highest mountain on the lunar surface, the highest above the surface. I don't know what point they're measuring it from. This is Mount Hadley Delta.
What's that line that looks like a stream?
Sorry?
What's that thing that looks like a stream?
That's the rill. This is what we're told
that's the rill.
Is a collapsed volcanic tube.
Looks very odd to me.
It could be a stretch mark. Moon might got bigger, or maybe it's a stitch mark. It's about a mile across, and there's some photographs we can have up here, but they do show from one side to the other. And if you ever tried photographing something a mile away, it's very difficult to see. Irrespective of the fact that you're going to get haze. I actually measured out 1 mile from the M25. I knew exactly how far from one signpost to the bridge I was on. It was 1 mile, and I photographed it. I can hardly see it. 1 mile is a long way away. Anyway, this is the landing site of Apollo 15. And here is the lander, Apollo 15. And this is Mount Hadley Delta. This is the mountain just behind us. It's this mountain here. There's just a crater here. This appears in this picture here. It's just like the side there. Something to look at on this picture, which appears on quite a lot of them. You really only start to see it when you begin to look for precisely this. The dividing line between a highly detailed foreground and the almost ghost-like background. It's as if the background is artificial on a film set. And this is the interesting work that's been done recently by Jay Wyden, who's done a lot of research into Stanley Kubrick's work, specifically with his film Shining, where Jay Wyden claims that Stanley Kubrick planted loads of clues into the Shining to point people in the direction of the Apollo mission, which is just claimed that Kubrick had something to do with directing them, for instance. Undercover of filming his own masterpiece, 2001 Space Odyssey. Go on to Jay Wyden's website and get all the details. What I'm saying is that one of the points he made is that Kubrick used front projection on the film 2001. That was well known. He was one of the first people ever to use it. Normally, prime projection is quite hard to use because you've got to have a highly reflective screen to reflect the scene that you want to use as part of it. Now, if you remember in 2001, if you've seen it, you remember the ape scenes at the beginning of the African plane and the open space. That was prime projection. They use a two-way mirror, so you get the screen and the actors. Look it up on Google front projection to explain all the details. This is the effect it has. You get a dividing line between the studio itself, where the actors work, and the background.
There are a couple of shots in 2001, Marcus, when there's a very short build on the moon, as you know, and I think there's one shot, you see astronauts looking at a moon base in the background, yes. And it is very much like that.
Exactly the same sort of quite right.
And there's that set sequence of Diamonds Are Forever where James Bond crashes through the set, that's a lunar set, isn't it?
The set designer of Diamonds Are Forever is also a Kubrick set designer.
Yeah.
Brilliant. What's his name?
Ken Adam.
Ken
Adam?
Ken Adam. Okay, a little bit of detail here. These are almost consecutive photographs. This is Apollo Saturn 15, magazine number 88, photograph number 1863. They're not consecutive. They can take 11,000 on that magazine. They took quite a lot. There's only, five pictures between them. Where's the camera? There's only one camera.
Uh-huh.
He hasn't got a camera. How did he take that picture? Because Irving must have taken Scott, and Scott must have taken Irving. Scott's got the camera. Did he hand it to him as they walked past? And look again at this strange difference between the foreground and the background. Apollo 15. Where's the flag? Where's the lander? As might have the Delta, there's the crater, and no flag. They didn't move the flag, they touched it up, they placed it in on the top of their landing. I love these. You get lots and lots of landers if you look hard enough. One lander here, notch in the mountain, there's a notch in the mountain, same mountain, and with a flag this time. And you put the two pictures together and you've got two landers. Great. And you can get even better. You can get two craters if you want them. Almost consecutive pictures. Same magazine, one without a crater and one with a crater. This is the original NASA picture. This is quite a famous picture, this, because it's normally referred to as the C rock. There's normally a letter C on that rock. But I've deliberately shown it without, because I can't prove it was anything other than an artifact that appeared on the print, not in the original picture. They may have airbrushed it out. But there are other things to look at, such as the dividing line between the background. Hasselblad were really pissed off because their lenses were good enough to show every detail from here to infinity. And bear in mind, this is the lander, this is the lunar rover, which managed to leave some tracks. The strange tracks it left, because it drove straight over this rock here. And so you can see that the lunar surface does record tracks quite well. It's a bit of a technical picture, but if you look at this one, this picture here, you'll think, okay, well that's the lander, that's where it came from, obviously, because that's empty, it's got the American flag. There's lots of footsteps around there. But when they loaded it on for Apollo 16, they put it on the right-hand side of the ladder. Yeah, there's the ladder. They put it there. So how do they unload it from there? This, by the way, these analyses are all done by Jack White, who has published his work on website, which I'll show you at the end, called Powerless. Jack contacted me about 6-7 years ago after I appeared on Coast to Coast in America, American radio show, talking about Apollo. I was lying on my sofa at 3 in the morning in England and chatting away in Las Vegas and America, and I got quite a response. And Jack emailed me afterwards and said,
heard what you say, I agree with what you say. Now, I've got some analysis of many of the color photographs. You might like to see them, so somewhere. And I said, okay, well, I'll tell you where you should put them. And I'll show you at the end. This is Apollo 17. This is the lander going in. This is where it landed. This is the Taos Nitro Valley Hotel. Pretty routine picture, so they won't hassle there. So have a look here. There's the same picture you just looked at. Straight up slightly, as it fits better. This is the Apollo 11 landing site, back here, we're told. This is the Terminator, a different moves, curve, right? Okay, so you're going to get darkness, 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 light. That's something, so. Where's the Terminator here? It's not there. That, I would say, is a photograph of the big model we looked at. These are other pictures which are my computers used to manipulate it. In 1969, did they have Photoshop? Had it been invented? Quite likely.
You say quite likely?
Quite likely. The background's the same, but the rocks suddenly change and they appear to have stretched it here. Structure. You can do it digitally nowadays very easily. Tall mountain, there's the lander. There's the hang on. Lander. That's the same picture as that one showing how far away it is. I don't know how that works. The perspective appears to be completely wrong. But if you've got models, then maybe it will go a bit. And then it's disappeared completely here. Gone. Completely gone. There's the lander. It's the same picture we looked at earlier. It's the rover. These vertical lines just indicate the similarity. And there's no lander. Did they leave? Who took the picture? Ah, this one. The lunar rover that leaves no tracks. No tracks either in front of the wheel or behind it. But plenty of footprints showing that the tracks could have been left, probably lowered by crane onto the surface. This is the final resting place of the same rover we just looked at, that's Apollo 17, but just have a look at one thing. Look at this. It was very proud of their repair to the rear mudguard. They put up an old piece of paper or map or something like that. But in the same gone. It's not there. These are two pictures showing the lunar rover in its final resting place. Well, they can't both be right, and there are no tracks showing how it got there. And the wheels are in different positions here. And if you've ever watched that takeoff sequence where the thing goes up into the air, this is how they allegedly filmed it from the video camera mounted on this lunar rover here. But that's a fake as well, because the rocket that takes the top half of this lunar module off, it's about 4,000 pounds of thrust, not that strong, but there's no gap between the rocket and the top of the launch pad. There's nowhere for the gases to go. It would probably set fire to it if they measured on it. Okay. Russians, why didn't they blow the whistle? Well, I think we've already covered that. The Americans knew that the Russians lied as much as they would, and they took their cue from it. And the Russians were very useful to the Americans. They were the guys who generated the whole space race. In 1974, while the Russian wheat harvest failed, America supplied Russia with millions of tons of wheat, so averting starvation, very generous, which had a hidden price tag. The rocks. Well, obviously they got the rocks, therefore they must have been to the moon, 380 kilos of them. Have you ever seen one? One of the science museum. I got it somewhere, it'll probably appear. I brought it back, I thought it was really nice to see it. It's just a remember it's from Vesuvius. It's a piece of volcanic rock. The point about the moon is it comes from this moon. Handle the reflectors. Reflectors, that's how they built them, that's where they put them. And now you fire lasers at them. Yeah, big deal. How many photons of light do you get back? In 1961, they were firing radar at the moon, they were firing radio signals at the moon and getting them back. It wasn't necessary to put a reflector there. You just fire it at the moon and it'll come back. If it's powerful enough. You just need a big enough receiver. Jodrell Bank's been big enough, 250 meter diameter. So you don't need anything on the moon to get the reflectors, no matter what the idiots say. The rocks could be anything really. Meteors in Antarctica, plenty of ones from the moon, from Mars, from another place. Yeah. The Russians certainly got there, got a few grains. But I say, have you ever seen a piece of moon rock? And would you know it was from the moon if you weren't told on the planet? It's a piece of moon rock. Well, that's a piece of moon rock, presented by Neil Armstrong, Michael Collins, Buzz Aldrin, to the ambassador, with the compliments of the ambassador of the United States to commemorate the visit to the Netherlands. They presented to the then Dutch Prime Minister. Oh dear. Fossilised wood. It was. Who told us about the trees on the moon? I don't remember seeing that.
Wow.
Very embarrassing. Alright, that would be, here's the proof. Apollo 11, 15, 16, 17 and 14. And there they are, they're the landers. That's the bottom half. It's about 10 foot high, half the height of this room. Okay, and it's about 10 foot wide and it casts a big shadow. There's not on here. Yeah, not on here. And it's not on here. And here's Apollo 14, isn't it? And here's Apollo 12. There's the lander. And there's the surveyor craft. And there's the footprints that they're making. Oh, and there's the ALSEP, Apollo Lunar Surface Experimental Program. Well, it must have been there, isn't it? NASA says so. And this is proof. This is the proof that NASA put forward. But we photographed the landers. It's complete nonsense. This doesn't prove anything, other than that they managed to get the arrows pointing in generally the right direction. But there are plenty of other things around. It could be, and I've heard of Photoshop too, so I'm sorry, I don't go there. Until somebody can come up with a decent photograph. You remember, maybe 15, 20 years ago, we were told that spy satellites were so good that they could read a newspaper headline from space. And technically, they could read a newspaper headline from space. Hayes and stuff were probably obliterated, but they've actually got better. They use radar to augment the images. And yes, you can read something. When they say read a newspaper headline from space, it means from 200 miles up, which is where satellites orbit the Earth, onto Earth, they can read something about 6 inches across. That's how they know it was on the alarm in their house. Predators and their spy satellites. But this is the best they can do. These are 10 foot wide, and it's about 2 or 3 pixels. It is appalling evidence of the incompetence and arrogance of NASA, but that is the best they can come up with. Now, if anybody can give me an argument on that and give me and tell me why this is the best they can, I'd like to hear about it.
Well, actually, I can tell you, I measured those photographs and I measured what they claim is the lower section.
Hmm.
And when you work out pixel count and everything, it's about 3 times too big on their picture. If you actually go and measure their enlargements, it comes up from 3 times too big. Yes, and you can't see it, it's just black or white, there's no in between.
I'm an astronaut 4 on this one. So, is it fact or is it fiction? It's not for me to say. You shouldn't agree with me. if you do agree with me and you think that there are some interesting places to look to find out more about it, that's the website I mentioned, Ireland.com. That's David Percy and Mary Bennett, who've published the book Dark Moon and the DVD, What Happened On, which I happen to have at home. Bill Casey, who was the originator who in 1974, started the whole process off and was allegedly this book was the inspiration for Capricorn 1. Ralph Rene spent many years researching it and did some quite interesting research, got some good pictures. And Gerhard Wisniewski, who's actually a German journalist, very interesting book. That's where I got a lot of the information about the Russian space program. I haven't got a copy here, Ice Monster. But also to everybody else, there are many, many people around the world who are continuing the research. And I should also acknowledge NASA for their generosity in making it available on the Hubble Apollo record. And they thought that they would put the Hubble Apollo record on and completely overwhelm everybody, because there are tens of thousands of pictures to look through. If you know what you're looking for, you don't have to look through them. You just have to look for the ones that got mistakes in it. So thank you for your attention. I hope you found it interesting, enjoyable, and along with Andrew, and even better, you can now look at things and not get fooled. But before you do, the one thing you should always look at. Thank you.
Where unknown forces strike the edge of ecology.